And it's 1 o'clock. So why don't we get underway? I see we've got Commissioner Graybill and Commissioner Anderson. Commissioner Carpenter will not be joining us. So and just a quick review of the agenda, we've got Pinniped first. And then we've got the hatchery policy. Is that next? Or what's the order?
I think Willapaw is next and hatchery last.
Okay, Willapaw and then hatchery last. So, and I also see we've got Joe Pinesco online and Nikki. So
there's Molly too.
And Molly too. Okay, very good. So why don't we start off? So Nate, why don't we kick off with the Pinnipeds?
Hey, thanks Commissioner Kehoe. And really I just am here to be available. Commissioner Anderson at the August commission meeting indicated that he wanted to submit a pinniped management blue sheet, provide an update of what's going on in the Columbia River, as well as Puget Sound. I had worked with him on a draft, and I believe he'll probably be bringing that up at the meeting here Friday or Saturday. So I'm happy to share the draft, Commissioner Anderson, or what, how would you like to proceed?
Well, basically, it can be fairly brief. I think this committee is pretty attuned to pinniped issues, but what I wanted to do with the blue sheet was to call out the need, if you will, for discussion around pinniped management, and particularly as it relates to salmon and steelhead recovery, and frankly, in particular around Puget Sound. There's a fair amount of work that's been done on the Columbia River. It's more well underway, and the idea is to continue to dial in there so we're aware of what's going on, and also pick up ideas and learn lessons. So as we talk about pinnipeds, we can continue to keep our eye on the situation and look at what's happening on Puget Sound and the coast. It's obvious that we spent a lot of money on salmon recovery, but we haven't done as much in terms of the look at predation. And we know that there's a lot of science involved. We know that there are legal constraints or implications or guidelines, if you will, whatever, that we have to be aware of. And so the idea with the blue sheet was to bring this forward to the entire commission in this time frame, and then set up for a briefing and further discussion sometime in the time frame of December or so. So that was the intent. There are funding issues, legal issues, management issues, education, outreach, public relations, all that that's woven into this. And but those of us that have looked into this and have been following it for years knows that there can be significant impacts to salmon and steelhead runs, certainly in certain areas. And we really need to have a strategic approach here so that we're not not addressing this or stumbling in places we don't want to be. So
thank you, Commissioner Anderson. So I think it may have been before you were on the commission. I believe, Nate, we had a couple of presentations, as I recall. One on kind of the challenges with respect to pinnipeds under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And I remember Nate gave an excellent kind of summary of kind of what, you know, the challenges that the current law provides for pinniped, I don't want to say removal, but pinniped control measures under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And so, and that did, and in the Columbia River, of course, you know, there was a specific law passed in Congress. There was no easy undertaking to loosen some of those restrictions, but it was limited to the Columbia River and the Columbia River estuary. And then also, I think we did have a presentation, Nate, you know, at least an initial evaluation of what the current estimate is in terms of pinniped's effect on salmon in Puget Sound and kind of what it might take to make maybe a significant dent in predation on salmon in Puget Sound. So, you know, maybe I don't know, Nate, I do think it's we have a new set of commissioners, evolving law, evolving issues. So just want to get your thoughts on maybe kind of revisiting some of those things that that the commission has been provided with. Just want to get your thoughts, Nate, on what your response to such a blue sheet would look like.
Well, I think this we welcome this. This is such a big topic. It's on the front of certainly our fishers' mind. It's on the minds of treaty tribes, and so having this topic kind of front and center with the commission makes a lot of sense. These are some really serious policy matters as we proceed. In particular, if we were to advance a proposal at some point regarding lethal management, we're currently doing some pretty cool work on the non-lethal side. We've got we're partnering on a project using an acoustic startle device at Ballard Locks with Oceans Initiative and Long Live the Kings and Muckleshoot Indian Tribe, Army Corps of Engineers, and currently working on a contract to deploy that same device maybe up at Bellingham later this fall. So I think that there's, with the updates of what's occurred with our Section 120F application under the Marine Mammal Protection Act to do removals in the Columbia River and the funding that we have secured already, it'd be nice to provide an update to you all on that. You know, at the call here a couple, 3 weeks ago, the commission plussed up our decision package request for 21-23 for us to have some funding. And that's going to really help us shift from kind of the catch-as-catch-can engagement on pinniped management to actually standing up more of a marine mammal program that's involved and really increase our capacity on everything from strandings to killer whale coordination to Columbia River management to the diet studies in Puget Sound. So I think there's a lot to update you on. I don't want to jump to what commission might pursue in the blue sheet in a briefing in December, but we welcome the opportunity to provide you all that update.
Okay, Mr. Thanks, Chairman. Nate. Does that help you, Commissioner Anderson, in kind of maybe formulating your blue sheet and focusing on things that you'd be interested in the commission hearing about and learning about?
Yeah, I think the blue sheet probably is comprehensive enough that we're in the element there. The and I think one of the things to emphasize is that there's a number of different moving actors here from the state to the tribes to the federal government. And I think it's critically important to be thinking forward so that we can organize the effort in ways that are successful. And I'm not prejudging an actual approach, but to say that there is a problem and there may be certain solutions anywhere from non-lethal to lethal, but a lot of it is affected by actions of others or inactions of others, that may be the case. And so I think it's important that we have those items front and center so that a strategic approach is put in place, one that can capture the energies that people bring or organizations bring into this. Or else I think we're going to find that we're continuing to be thwarted in some of our recovery efforts. And I'm thinking in particular, like in the Stillaguamish, like we know habitat's a big issue. We obviously know harvest is a big issue, but, you know, predation, even if we get that habitat turned around, which is a difficult task, you know, but predation is part and parcel to a situation there. And that's just one example. So, you know, I think we need to be looking strategically, watershed by watershed. Some places are not going to be the same problems. Other places are maybe some similarities, but we, you know, I'm looking for kind of an action plan at the end of the day so that we're having a way to keep our eye on this and to keep communicating.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Commissioner McIsaac, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm trying to take notes here. So Commissioner Anderson, I wondered if you could read again the title of your blue sheet, and then I was going to ask about the end point. And so, but you just started to address that with regard to some sort of an action plan. But in terms of a report to the commission, I guess it would come up under the Fish Committee report at the beginning of the day. And if the commission is amenable to the idea, we'd take it up again at the end of the meeting under year at a glance and future meeting planning. So what is the title again? Maybe you could recharacterize again what the expectation is.
Well, the title, as you can read, is Conservation and Management Update. It could be amended to, you know, development of a action plan that, you know, pinniped management action plan. You know, I don't want to walk away from the elements of, you know, some of the education there and background, but, you know, where I would like to land at the end is clearly a strategic direction that we would have that would help guide our discussions. I don't know if that makes any sense. So it could be retitled. Somebody can help me with, you know, I would use action plan or strategic direction or
kind of okay.
Those okay. are problem areas for the commission to, you know, if we can say those things or whether we have limitations on the kind of things that we would get involved in versus the department. But, you know, I'd like to provide that kind of direction to the department.
And that was going to start with some sort of a briefing, perhaps in December, you say.
Yeah. So maybe condense the, you know, what you see there in terms of the briefing, but then have another element like, so what's there is like one, and then number two would be a discussion and strategic direction.
Yeah. Okay. And I was going to ask if we could see a copy of the blue sheet and our, I see this email coming in right away from Nikki, who's on top of everything just very nicely on this. So thank you. That will help on the reporting, and then maybe you can speak to it more in detail when it goes before the full commission.
Yeah. Commissioner Graybill.
Thank you, Bob. I know that, you know, once the Fed's kind of loosened up the parameters in terms of potential actions with pinnipeds, particular to the Columbia River. I know that we got that quite a while ago, and at that time you said it would probably take about a year before we would have all of that in place and could take the next step, which would be actual control of the animals and actual probably removal. But, and not to get ahead of what you're asking for, Jim, but where are we in that process, Nate?
Commissioner Graybill, the Marine Mammal Protection Act was amended in December of 2018. In May of 19, we, along with the Columbia River, the members of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, Idaho and Oregon, submitted an application to NIMS consistent with that new authority under the MMPA. Fast forward to May of 2020, NIMS stood up the pinniped task force and convened them. They made a recommendation to approve the co-manager's application. Then that started a time clock. I can't remember if it was 60 days or so, and maybe it was 90 days, but it started the clock. And we just recently received approval from NIMS that that application was approved. We also had received funding from the legislature for this fiscal year that we couldn't access until NIMS approved the permit. So we just now got the kind of the release on the funding, and we're moving forward with staffing up. Part of this, you know, part of the new application is to be able to remove Stellar sea lions as well as California sea lions. And Stellar sea lions are, you know, three times the size of California sea lions. So there's some additional equipment and things like that that we need to do. We need to have some staffing. There's some safety issues that we're wanting to address to be able to handle Stellars. But we're, you know, we'll be able to start implementing that permit here this fall.
That's terrific, Nate. And I would think that, you know, the state of Oregon had a pretty ambitious program in the Willamette River. We could probably learn a lot from them in terms of what, how to deal with these big animals. Yeah.
Yeah. And the ODFNW permit was for California sea lions, just like our previous permit with Oregon on Bonneville for the past 10 years was for California sea lions. So yeah, we've got a good crew down there. We've got good protocols. We've, you know, previously just had to do the catch and release thing with Stellars, and now when California sea lions or Stellar sea lions are upstream of the I-205 bridge, they meet the requirements under the MMPA of being individually identifiable. And so we don't have to do that branding, releasing, hazing, verification that they ate a salmon, et cetera. If we catch the animal, we'll be able to euthanize it.
This is great. You know, it's been a long time coming. I'm sure the public is going to be thrilled with the prospect of action finally being taken on this. And I know it's been a process, Nate, and I appreciate the work you've done on that. It takes a lot of energy, amongst other things, to keep something like this moving forward. And thanks for staying on top of it and keeping the commission abreast of that. And hopefully you can give us an update when the full commission meets sometime soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, so I don't see any other hands up. I think what we're going to do, I know Chair Carpenter has invited members of the public listening in. On this topic, I don't really think it's necessary or appropriate. I would encourage people that are interested to tune in on Saturday for the Blue Sheet discussion. And thanks to Commissioner Anderson for thinking about this and bringing this forward. And assuming we get the commission approves the Blue Sheet, then I would think that Commissioner Anderson and can work with Nate and perhaps fine tune, you know, kind of the expectations about what presentation would be, other information. So with that, why don't we move on to Willapa. And I assume we've got Chad. Is he going to lead our discussion here?
Thank you, Chairman Kehoe. Yeah, happy to be in front of you discussing this topic today. I believe Ron's on the call too, but I think I'll be leading this agenda item.
So, Chad, before you get kind of started, I wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of the fact that Bob Lake, Willapa, Graves Harbor, just commercial fishing advocate, passed away just recently. Hope everybody knew that. You know, Bob, he was before the commission many, many times, had some longstanding, unique perspectives, interesting perspectives, valuable perspectives from being a lifelong resident, and just wanted to make sure people aware of Bob's passing and just acknowledge his contribution.
Bob, thank you very much for mentioning that. In my term on the commission, I've seen Bob in attendance many, many times. Very well-spoken, a good advocate for the industry, and his passing will be missed. I always look forward to his testimony, and thank you for sharing.
Thanks, and sorry for the interruption, Chad, but I just want to get that.
No worries. Actually, you stole a little bit of my thunder. I was wondering just real quickly if maybe on Saturday, right before the Willapa item, might be a good time to just maybe mention that and, you know, have a moment there to remember Bob. Got a long history with Bob Lake. He was always involved, an advocate, an advisor. A lot of folks knew about his passion for the Bay and for commercial fishing, but I don't think they understood his overall impact, his involvement in hatchery, habitat restoration across the Bay as a member of the Willapa Bay Lead Entity Group, and as part of the Regional Fisheries Enhancement Group, was instrumental in a lot of streamside incubation and off-channel releases of salmonids in Willapa Bay. So he will be missed. He was quite an advocate for Willapa Bay fisheries and salmon management. So appreciate that. Thank you.
And I think your idea, Chad, of maybe a something, just an acknowledgement of Bob and his passing and his contributions is completely appropriate for Saturday. And I hate to speak for Chair Carpenter, but I'm 100% certain he would agree. Thanks.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think, it would be a good gesture. Yeah, that was a tough one to learn of this last weekend. So on that sad note, I'll move on to the business at hand today. It almost feels like this topic should deserves a musical intro, and I would suggest The Long and Winding Road from the Beatles as we get into this. I started this
help
in Willapa Bay policy back in 2014, and so it's been a long 6-year journey to get to this point. This presentation that I'm going to give this weekend will focus on the comprehensive review, which also has been a long process. For me, we started holding meetings and discussing this back in January of 2018. So what we're hoping to do is kind of seek commission approval of the what we're calling the draft comprehensive review document at this time as kind of complete, as a, you know, an assignment handed down in the policy itself to review the performance and implementation of the policy through phase one, which would be fisheries years 2015 and 18. So we've got basically an hour, a long presentation, and I'm not going to go through all of that today. I'm just going to focus on some of the highlights. I would be remiss if I didn't mention you all received after the last Fish Committee briefing the review document, and it was also posted online under the commission webpage on a Willapa Bay policy review specific webpage. In subsequent review of that document, there are a few minor edits we would like to make. There's about three or four just language related extra spaces. In one place it says coastal when it should be coast, a couple things like that. A little bit higher bar level is figure 27, which is the Chum escapement graph. As we shrunk and formatted that graph for the document, the line that is describes the escapement goal didn't move to where it should be. So I've got a draft document that's got that change in it, fixed, ready to go. And then as we talked about earlier, this has been a super long process. Some aspects of this report were written a year and a half ago, and some completed just literally, 12, 14 weeks ago. So there's a couple updates specifically on table four and in the language surrounding table four. 2018 COHO, the escapement objective or the estimate, run reconstruction estimate, was 11,300, the spawning escapement estimate was 11,344. That's an old number. It's actually been updated to 11,408. And then similarly for Chum, the number in the document currently is 38,414. Once again, for 2018 Chum, that number has been updated and finalized to 38,582. So not huge changes, but would be remiss if I didn't mention them to you folks that we would like to fix those errors as we move forward. So jumping into the presentation, I'll go ahead and share my screen here, and hopefully I can do this without too many hiccups. Okay, is everybody, okay, looks like we're all, is everybody seeing the screen?
Yeah, change your format though, because we can see your next slide.
Oh, okay, let me.
Oh, your display settings?
Yeah, no, I clicked on the wrong one. Let's try, here we go. Still the same thing.
Way better. It looks different though.
Okay. Okay, great. All right. So the presentation and a focus on, I'm going to briefly touch on the intent and development, some of the objectives of this policy. We've gone over these quite a few times over, previous meetings. So I'm not really going to dive into those much today. The report card is really based on the a stoplight paradigm utilized in the Columbia River policy review, and it really just focuses on implementation of the specific aspects of the policy itself. If you'll remember, we discussed this in Fish Committee and at a commission meeting back in January of 2019. So I'm not really going to focus on that much today, other than just to say we've looked at this and that has not changed from the last time we reviewed that, albeit a year ago. I will go into more detail in the presentation, but in the interest of saving time today, I thought I would focus more so on the review document conclusion and review some of the commissioner's emphasis questions. So we received about 36 emphasis questions from the commission. We took about eight or nine of those. That we felt we could cover within the hour that would be most setting up good discussion around the implementation and performance of the policy. So I'll just go through some of the conclusions of the document here. The policy implementation in phase one has produced some mixed results. While we've planned preseason to meet policy objectives every year, so that box has been checked. Although, as we'll get into detail later, there are some postseason reviews that would say we didn't quite meet the bar of some of those policy objectives, but we did plan to meet them preseason. We have developed quite a bit more robust fisheries monitoring, specifically marine area recreational and then commercial fisheries, development of a lot of tools given that data. in-season tools that we can use to adaptively manage the fishery. In one case, a run size update. We've really worked hard on increasing the transparency and information sharing around salmon management in Willapa Bay by more focused conversation with the Willapa Bay Salmon Advisory Group, a lot more communication during the North of Falcon process, providing meeting minutes and agendas and handouts and recordings of those meetings for folks who weren't able to attend but still would like to provide some comment. Developed a web page where all this stuff lives, so people kind of have one-stop shopping, as it were, to see all the Willapa Bay preseason planning documents, discussions, all that sort of stuff. We've developed an in-season mailer, which really gives folks a weekly insight into recreational and commercial fisheries, how they're performing in relation to preseason predictions, as well as looking at some hatchery data and some other environmental stuff that might be appropriate to look at given the situation. So, and that's, we've had a lot of success with that. I believe there's a little over 350 people signed up to receive that weekly, and we continue to get people asking to be included on that list. So in terms of the performance of the policy, spawning escapements for Chinook and Chum have improved over pre-policy levels. A lot of the commissioner emphasis questions focus on the 4 years of policy implementation in phase one, fisheries year 2015 to 2018, in relation to the 4 years preceding policy implementation, which would be 11 through 14. So a lot of the comparative work that we did is really guided by that commission question. So when we look at that, we see a small bounce to Chinook, we see a bounce to Chum. Obviously, as you folks are all aware, Willapa Bay is no different. We've seen a big decline in coho beginning in 2015. And, you know, that's not just specific to Willapa Bay. We've seen that all across the state and a lot of coho stocks. As an outcome of policy implementation, you know, commercial fisheries saw reduced catch and reduced value. They were heavily impacted by this policy, and that likely has had a negative impact on the effort. We've seen the effort continue to be reduced year in and year each year. So recreational fisheries, we saw increased catch and harvest proportions of Chinook and coho going to the recreational sector in comparison to pre-policy implementation. One of the big things that we've heard a lot about, and we'll talk about this during public comment, is the reduction in the hatchery program, specifically Forks Creek, going from a 3.2 million Chinook smolt release down to a 350K. We've seen the effect of that starting to affect, you know, catch in the recreational, specifically marine fishery. And as those fish drop out completely, and we feel the effects totally of that hatchery reductions, you know, this will impact fisheries performance moving forward. And then with some of the changes and liberalizing in recreational freshwater fisheries and bag limits, those have led to some enforcement challenges in some areas. We've talked about that previously. And it's also led to an increase in some negative landowner interactions between fishers and then with department staff as well. So I'm going to go ahead and pause there just in case anybody has any questions before I kind of move into a few of the commission questions. I wasn't sure how much detail you really wanted me to get into here, whether we should just focus on question and answers or that.
Okay, Fish Committee members, any questions at this point? What about other commissioners? Okay.
Okay.
Move forward.
Well, please. I will continue on and go over briefly some of the commission emphasis questions. You know, what we tried to do in this presentation is highlight the commission question, the commissioner question, the highlighted policy document with markup is included in the review document. So I'm just going to touch on a couple of these briefly. This one discusses the harvest, the aggregate fishery impact rates in comparison to those 4 years versus the pre-policy years. And, you know, in each one of these, I provide the call out there to the document of where that detailed discussion about this specific question is. But for this one, you can see here, I've got a table of the postseason aggregate fishery impact rates. So both marine and commercial fisheries for Chinook, these and coho, these values are just natural origin fish. For chum, they are naturally just no origin composition to them, just Willapa Bay chum. I'll remind folks that the management objectives for phase one of the policy for Chinook was a 20% impact rate cap to Willapa River and Naso River Chinook stocks. And then chum was a 10% impact rate cap. You can see here in the table that we've seen a pretty big reduction in the impact of our fisheries on Chinook, a 56% in the phase one of the policy compared to previously, a reduction in coho, 27%, and a pretty big reduction to chum at 65%. A few of the others that I wanted to touch on. So the first question dealt with impact rates and also conservation objectives. So I've got more detail later on in the presentation, but this is where we are for conservation objectives and expressed as the natural origin spawner objectives, escapements for Chinook and coho, and for chum, they're just naturally spawning. So for Chinook, we've seen a small increase, as I mentioned earlier, about 5%. You can see that level of 2,363 on average in phase one as compared to the 2,248 on average prior to policy implementation. Talked a little bit about the coho, see a big decrease there. Once again, probably not really relevant to policy implementation, more likely driven by outside factors, environmental, habitat related. And then for chum, we've seen an increase in the spawning escapement of chum, 29%, and we have made chum escapement 3 out of the 4 years during phase one of the policy. So I'm not going to go through.
Chad, sorry to interrupt, but we've got a couple of questions. Commissioner Baker?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. I accidentally raised my hand, but I think I put it back down.
Okay. Commissioner McIsaac.
Yes, thanks, Bob. So on that table of exploitation rates, I thought you said this was the aggregate fishery take rate for ocean and freshwater fisheries. And that 8.1% in 2018 catches my eye. In fact, all the ones in recent years look like they were just the freshwater. So did I mishear you? Is this an aggregate of commercial and recreational and freshwater in the 15 to 18 area? And for 2011 to 14, is it that same standard as well? It does not count any Pacific Council or U.S. Canada marine takes?
Absolutely. Thank you. That's a great clarifying question, Commissioner McIsaac. That is true. These are just terminal aggregate impact rates for Willapa Bay fisheries, both marine and freshwater for recreational fisheries, and commercial estuary fisheries are included in these numbers. They are apples to apples comparisons in terms of the pre-policy to post-policy levels. And I would be remiss, glad you pointed out the 8.1%. These are also heavily impacted by in-season adaptive management changes. Specifically that 18 value, we had some real challenges with coho. As we ran some of our new tools, we were seeing coho come in really low numbers, and we made some adaptive management changes to the fishery. Given the mixed stock nature of this fishery, really impacted the harvest of Chinook as well, as we made some pretty big changes.
Thank you.
Yep. Great question. Thank you. So some of the other questions center on X vessel value. This is the X vessel value of the commercial fishery. It's been normalized. Take home message here is the value of the Chinook fishery has decreased by 78% when you account for all the variability in run size and price per pound pre-policy to policy implementation. Coho, 51%, and Chum, 78%. Overall, when you put that all together, it's basically a 68% reduction in the overall ex-vessel value, once again, normalized for those differences, annual differences.
Question on that, on the economics. So when I think of normalizing, and a part of the question here is, are there changes in the economics to these two fisheries because of the policy, or is there changes due to the price per pound changes? So I was thinking that the normalization would assign the same price per pound to pre-policy and post-policy to isolate the differences due to the policy. So when I see these averages, it makes me wonder if that's what you mean by normalization or something different.
Yeah, no, that's accurate. And we also normalized by the run size to account for differences in run size. So what you see here would be really effective policy. And as we shifted the commercial fishery from Chinook to some time that they had for in the Chinook management period to really a Coho and Chum fishery, that has affected the ex-vessel value of Chinook greatly in Willapa Bay. For Coho, and to touch on the price per pound question, our price per pounds really don't vary greatly. They vary a little bit, but are pretty standard for Willapa Bay. You don't see nearly as much variation in the price per pound as you would say in the Columbia, as you do here in Willapa. They're really within 50 cents of each other once they're adjusted for inflation or GDP adjusted, right?
So the right take-home message is when you normalize for run size and take that out of the question, when you normalize for price per pound, take that out, the commercial fishery for Chinook decreased by 78% in the economic value to the fishery as a result
Absolutely.
Of the policy.
Absolutely.
Got it.
Absolutely.
Quick question to that, if I might, Chad.
No, please.
I can't recall, but did the policy, we have any expectation about what the impact on the commercial fishery the policy might have? Was there an estimation? I think we did. There was some work on that, I recall, with respect to the Columbia policy. Did we do some analysis? Pre-policy, and if so, how did the outcome, based on your analysis, pair with the predicted impacts?
Yeah, great question, Chairman Kehoe. There was some work done initially as we started policy development, and those were expressed in terms of aspirational objectives as we started going through. And at one point in time, I believe that aspirational objective was to maintain the current economic standing of the commercial fishery. And it was right about, I want to say, $934,000 a year. As we started moving through policy development more robustly, those aspirational objectives kind of fell by the wayside, as it was plainly obvious that was going to be really difficult based on where we were headed. So I wouldn't say in our final presentation it included any sort of economic ex-vessel expectation for what we would likely see as an outcome of policy implementation.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. For Coho, as we look at the economics here for Coho, while there has been some limitations to the fishery, really due to the crashing of the coho abundances here in Willapa Bay, that reduction we see there is more about the lack of coho that we've seen rather than any sort of policy action. There were some changes to Chum. Specifically that 10% terminal impact rate Chum, that probably played a pretty big effect in the reduction in ex-vessel value we're seeing here. So let's see, like I said, I want to make sure I'm cognizant of the time here. Question about angler trips. As we've developed some more robust recreational monitoring, specifically in the marine area, we don't have that ability in the freshwater, but for the marine area, we can see an increase in the number of angler trips, a doubling, and just the straight number of angler trips that we're estimating in the marine area of Willapa Bay. In that 2018 value dropping, that's really when you start to see this reduction of Forks Creek fish start to take effect. And as the fishery starts to become less fun and people are harvesting more fish, less people start to come out. And when you look at how we did this, when you look at, obviously I didn't have some of the CPUE data needed to develop these angler trip estimates prior to 2015. So we took what we saw as an average CPUE across the 15 through 18 years and applied them to 11 through 14 just as a surrogate in order to try and satisfy this request. That CPUE of 2.59, I'll put it in perspective. This year through the marine area fishery, I'm seeing a CPUE of 0.1. And that really just speaks to that reduction in Forks Creek production and how that's affecting the fishery as those fish drop out. It's had a huge effect. Once again, when we normalize for the changes in run size of salmonids, the variability in run size of salmonids in Willapa Bay, you still see a pretty big increase in the angler trips as we've moved it, as we've gone through phase one of the policy compared to pre-policy levels. So one of the other things, one of the other questions I wanted to touch on was about the three big advancements we could say are outcomes of the policy or policy implementation. And as I've kind of touched on a little bit here, increased monitoring of the estuarine recreational and commercial fisheries has really been huge. It's allowed us real-time estimates of harvest and impacts and effort. For the marine area fishery, I will remind folks that has been an incremental progression where we finally got to those real-time estimates beginning in the fishery season 2018. That gives us the ability to compare pre-season predicted values versus in-season estimates and then make adaptive changes to make sure that we ensure attainment of those management objectives outlined in the policy. Another big one from a technical tools perspective is we've been able to develop an in-season run size update model for coho. We've utilized that the last few years with some good effect. It's told us that we had less fish than what we predicted in our forecast, and it turned out we did quite a bit. It's based on historic catch per unit effort data from the commercial fisheries. As I referenced earlier, when you look at commercial fisheries, the management paradigm for commercial fisheries with the policy was really a big shift in Chinook management, but not so much in coho management. So it's a good tool where we still have kind of apples to apples long-term data set. With the changes to Chinook management, that Chinook management paradigm, we've struggled to develop a tool to be able to update the run size for Chinook, but staff are diligently working on that. We've got about a 5-year data set now under this new paradigm. So hopefully we'll be able to find something there to help out moving forward. And then lastly is the coded wire tag based analysis of hatchery contributions in estuary fisheries. This was something we developed early on to really be able to provide run reconstruction data specifically for Chinook. So we could look at what was harvested in the marine area and assign it to a specific river system as the management objective for Chinook expressed in a total terminal impact rate cap on natural origin fish for Willapa River and for Nacelle River. Didn't really have a really good way of doing that. We're updating that annually as we collect both genetic and CWT information from both the commercial and recreational fisheries. And the CWT programs were reconfigured in the 2016 brood year to just be able to more accurately do this moving forward. And I expect beginning this year and in successive years, we'll really see a lot tighter predictions once this data really starts to come in and it catches up with the CWT releases from those past brood years.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I forgot to unlower my hand. I'm good.
Okay, thank you.
And really the last question I want to go over, you know, there's a lot in here that we'll touch on in more detail in the production, but the actual fall Chinook production release locations for the hatcheries in Willapa Bay. I've got a table here. I would note that all releases of Chinook smolts in Willapa Bay are conducted on station. So Forks Creek fish in the Willapa River watershed are released from Forks Creek. The NEMA hatchery fish are released from the NEMA facility and nacelle as well. There are no off-station plants of Chinook in Willapa Bay. You can see here in the Forks Creek, you know, 3.2 before down to 372, and we've talked about that quite extensively. We've seen a small bounce to NEMA, although that really hasn't changed. It's just been we've talked previously about the struggle of collecting broodstock and keeping those fish alive in the NEMA system. The increase in production here is really just we've had all these fish returning to Forks Creek, so we've been able to backfill more effectively into NEMA where we didn't before because we've had extra broodstock on hand over these last couple of years. We don't anticipate that moving forward, right? Now we're getting releases, and now we're getting returns in Forks Creek off the lower 300,000 number. So that ability is gone. And we made some changes to that, if you'll remember in the February commission review about releasing hatchery fish in Willapa Bay, just on a one-time basis as we move through this policy review. And then you can see a big increase here in nacelle. And I'll remind the commission this was due to legislative action that took place in the 2016 brood year, which gave us some money to move up to 2.5 million Chinook release in Willapa Bay, and also some money for monitoring and monitoring and evaluation work in the nacelle system. And I would, moving into the 2020 brood year collection, we're shooting actually for a goal of 5 million in the nacelle system, and that's and some additional production there to benefit southern resident killer whales and make available prey for those animals. There's some stuff on chum here that I won't go through. Talked a little bit about the long process and the extensive public comment that we've had as we've gone through this, 12 meetings over the last 2 years, the most recent one done by webinar on August 18th. As I mentioned earlier, all those agendas, meeting materials, and audio from all those meetings are available on the webpage. The staff notes, we have a staff person, regional staff, Barbara McClellan, that takes incredible notes for us. Those are all attached in the review document itself under Appendix 6. And this is the link to the Willapa Bay Advisory Group webpage where you can review all those materials, everything having to do with all those meetings as well as North of Falcon meetings pertaining to Willapa Bay preseason fishery planning. We also added, as the document was posted onto the commission webpage, there was an online portal there where people could submit their comments. As this presentation was finalized, I believe I sent this thing off to Nikki on September 2nd or September 3rd. Up through that date, we had 21 comments submitted. Just the link here for that, the Willapa Bay policy review under the commission webpage, excuse me. And then lastly, public comments. So I've been paying attention quite a bit to the Columbia River policy review, and I like what Ryan and Bill did with their public comment. These are in no specific order. They're not numbered. They're just pulled forward as some of the comments that we've heard. As you guys are probably more than aware, comment all over the board, some of it quite substantial, some of it, you know, 3, 7, 8 pages worth of thoughts from folks, and other a couple of sentences that may not be all that helpful it is what it is. We see comment all over the board. A couple of the overriding themes I would like to point out are that hatchery production. We've heard a lot from folks about, and not just in Willapa Bay, you know, you folks are fully aware that there's a strong move to increase hatchery production throughout the state. Willapa Bay is no different. And then, you know, one thing I would say, and I don't want to speak for any of the members of the public or try and summarize their thoughts, but there hasn't been a whole lot of way to go attaboys about this policy. It's been very controversial on both sides, recreational, commercial, you know, running the gamut from you didn't implement it to you implemented it and it's killing us. It just is all over the board. So that's about as much as really as I want to get into the public comment. I'm sure we'll have substantial public comment after the presentation on Saturday. At least I would anticipate that. And really, that's about all I got for today.
Hopefully that wasn't too much.
Yes. Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Maybe just one heads up, and excuse again for the screaming phone in the background. That's the other one, not my cell phone. Anyway, a heads up for some questions on Saturday when this comes up, to follow up on Commissioner Kehoe's question. Did things work out as expected? So for the commercial fishery, you just kind of said, no, the expectation or the target was to maintain, and it went down by 80%. So maybe you could anticipate some similar questions about the sport fishery. What was expected to occur for the sport fishery and what has happened? And on the hatchery programs, was it expected and did the policy call for a reduction down to 400,000 at Forks Creek Hatchery? And so that should not be a surprise. That's what was expected by the policy. And did the policy say anything about these enhancements for killer whales or anything else? Did the policy say, no, we don't want any more hatchery fish for that, and now that's not going as expected? Or did the policy say silent to that and that would be okay? Or is that going to complicate some of the PHAS situations elsewhere? So anyway, if you could just anticipate a line of questioning along the lines of, in the evaluation, did things turn out as expected? I also have a question about the process from here out. So our agenda, the main agenda, says next steps. And you indicated one thing that the staff's looking forward to is this a report in a situation where it can be adopted as final and move on to the next step. And let me compliment the staff on doing this report. It's very readable, and also compliments to putting this on the website so that people can access that and know a little bit about the process. But it sounds like we're going to take public testimony on that question, maybe. Does the public think the report is complete, or do they think something might have been left out? And then as we move down the rest of the process, I wondered if you could just speak a little bit to that, in particular as to when we would ask the public for ideas to improve the policy. I know we've heard a lot of testimony on this Forks Creek reduction, and some people have ideas to, it would cost money to put weirs in, and you could still get the PHAS numbers down if you had the right weir in the right spot or something like that. But it's unclear to me when we hear from the public as to ideas for changes in the policy. You said it's all across the board. Some love it, some hate it. But has that already been put out, and that's going to be part of the public testimony on Saturday? And so the next step is really to consider language changes, or have we yet to ask the public for their ideas on language changes?
Thank you for that, Commissioner McIsaac. I appreciate the heads up. I did take some notes on that, so we will be prepared. In terms of does the public think the policy review is complete? Really what we did with the August 18th meeting was kind of ask that question. What did we miss in the policy review document? And we did get some answers to that. A couple of things that people brought up that are not really addressed. As you guys are aware, fisheries management is incredibly complex, and to go through something like this and and try and go through all of it would take much more than the 300 pages that we put together. But, you know, with that, there are some things that folks brought up that really aren't touched on as much as they could have been in the review document. One of those would be one of those that was brought up during that meeting was this pre-spawn mortality that we've seen in some of the Chinook systems, specifically NEMA and Nacelle, associated with low water conditions and disease. One of the deliverables that we provide in the review document in the appendix is a stock recruit modeling analysis for Chinook salmon within Willow Bay. And one of the things that as our FRAM modeling team worked on that analysis, one of the things they stumbled across that they found was really interesting, and I thought a great informational and should be included, was the what we've seen. We've got flow gauges in Willow Bay on the Willow River system and on the Nacelle River system, and what we've seen when we've looked at that in a historical context is we've basically seen a 30% reduction to stream flows in those two systems in August and September, when our Chinook are returning. When you look at, the 21st century in comparison to the 20th century, we've got less water during the time Chinook are coming back. I think we could all hypothesize that also, we've seen warmer temperatures, so that we've got less water, probably warmer water, and it's more than likely affecting survival of Chinook as we've dealt with some of these pre-spawn mortality issues. We don't really dive into that in huge detail at all in the document. That's one thing that was brought up. In terms of the question, have we asked the public how we could fix things? That actual, the meeting notes for the January 23rd, 2018, what we did was we had a public workshop down in Raymond at the Elks Club, and we asked that specific question. What did you like about the policy? What mm-hmm. don't like about the policy? What could we fix? What could we do better? What are we not implementing? And we put four flip charts around the room, and we basically just put a staff member at each flip chart and just let the public go to whichever one they want, and we just jotted down their thoughts. The actual photos of those flip charts from those meetings are included in the notes from that meeting and in the appendices of that document. So if you'd like to see that, they're there for you to review. So we have done that somewhat, is an answer to that question. In terms of the process moving forward, I'm gonna go with my phone a friend, and Ron Warren is on the line. I think there's still some discussion to be had about this and where we may be going and how this should be perceived. Yeah, how this should proceed. You there, Ron?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah. We can. Go ahead, Ron.
Fantastic. So thank you, Chad. Nice. Condensed briefing for the commissioners. Commissioner McIsaac, although Chad's absolutely correct on what we've done, I do not believe we've formally said how would we go about changing this, should we go about changing the existing policy. People would now have a complete comprehensive review document to look at, to use, to give us some additional comment. And maybe the commission could ask us to put that out in a press release and take some comment between now and next month's commission meeting. We could come back and summarize that information for you and then take some guidance on maybe what the commission would like to see from a or if they would like to see a policy modification in any way.
Okay, thanks. And maybe we can talk more about that on Saturday.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that, Commissioner McIsaac. I think that's a good topic for all of the commissioners to weigh in on. That is, okay, we've got the report, see mixed results. what should the commission be looking at in terms of tweaking the policy, you know, either doing nothing, keeping it status quo, making changes. So I think that would be appropriate discussion after public comment. And with respect to public comment, I think in the on this topic, in the spirit of moving along, we've got one agenda item left. So I'm not going to allow public to weigh in right now, but certainly your opportunity is there on Saturday to come. So why don't we then pivot to the last agenda item, and is that's the hatchery reform policy.
It is. So, thank you, Chair Kehoe. Yeah, thank you. Sorry for the background, but
Corvette Stingray.
It's a beautiful Toyota Tacoma pickup, and I was glad my doctor's appointment went not only well but quickly. So let's see if I can just quickly share a screen without dropping anybody.
Got it.
Yeah, There we go. Okay, so I'm just going to leave it in this mode just to show you a condensed version of what you're going to see on Saturday. I did not hear assignments from the commission in the motion to put this out for additional public comment. What I'm trying to come back and provide to you is where we were, kind of the timeline that we've been through, what we've done to date, the overview of the public comment that we've received from the last commission meeting to just a few days ago, as well as update you on the SEPA checklist that we're getting going, and then provide next steps. The one thing I would share is that really the public comment, again using the format that we used in the Columbia River, I really like that. Again, not in any particular order, but just a bunch of different comments from biological concerns, genetic concerns, doesn't address all H's, economic stability, and just so the commission's clear, I haven't read all of the comments that we received. I had staff prepare the themes. So if you have questions on these on Saturday, I will be fully prepared to answer any questions on what these may mean in the context that they were given in. I will say I was impressed with the organizations and the individuals who submitted comment. Don't know if the commissioners have had time to read comments yet, but I will certainly be prepared the best I can to answer any additional questions on Saturday to come up with, or to make sure that you're fully informed about what people were saying about the current process and the current draft policy. And then trying to walk through next steps for commissioners. Obviously, we've got a public hearing on this topic. As I did back on the August 1st date, had said that we would continue to take public comment after this meeting in September. And then I would propose to come back to you, brief you on the public comments in October, update you on the outcome of or the current status of any CEPA review that was done, and then the commission could consider adoption of the anadromous salmon and steelhead hatchery policy. So and not a very elaborate, I think that the commissioners that are here know the extensive work that we've done, the positives that have come from that, some of the struggles or challenges that we've had. I do owe Commissioner Anderson some additional work on our website relative to this project that I failed to get to before I took a little bit of time off. I hope to chat with him soon about that so that that's complete. But this is the presentation, very quick, very compressed, that I hope to give you on Saturday.
Very good. Any questions from Fish Committee members?
Thank you, Bob, if I may.
Yes, please.
I know this is just a flash for us to look at, Ron. What I'm not seeing, and it probably is part of this, just some reassurances that our engagement with our co-managers is part of this process. Doesn't appear real evident in what you've shown us, but I know it's brief. And is this October timeline realistic given our obligations to our co-managers?
Great. Thank you for the question, Commissioner Graybill. I think that what I was trying to focus on is the time period between the August 1st presentation and the one coming up here on Saturday. I've continued to have conversations with tribes about that topic, but no concerns other than the desire that the commission request the director to engage in a joint policy development through this policy. So I think that without trying to capture or speak for the tribes, I know how that would be construed as a big mistake. I would say that the tribes are resolve in us doing this policy, but have a expectation that that language would be retained and that the department would engage in that after adoption of the policy.
Okay, so it is anticipated.
The other thing that I believe so, yes. I don't think that we are going to surprise the tribes in any way by finalizing this and moving this forward. The only thing I think I would be remiss in updating the commissioners is that in talking to organizations and the few comments I've read, I think the one big consistent thing is people are nervous about, skeptical about having taken out some of those outcome-based approaches that we had in the policy. So what are you managing to PNI-wise? What are you managing to from a stray rate perspective? And I know that we talk about genetic integrities and in the policy, but I think that the belief by many of the public, at least those that I've talked to, are nervous about the lack of outcome-based reporting and the frequency of reporting, if I were to try to concisely say that. Well, so I would be remiss if I wasn't communicating that to commissioners.
I really appreciate that, Ron. I get nervous when I see adoption of a policy when we can anticipate further engagement with the tribes. And, you know, we've kind of been, we created a negative atmosphere when we got ahead in this process of the tribes. And you would know best, if we are in lockstep with the tribes and our adoption of a policy is not premature without their contributions.
Yep, and we have certainly received many comments, had many conversations with the tribes, Commissioner Graybill. I don't think that they would view this as a policy that they would want to live with. I think that they would want us to come and develop a joint policy with them. I have not heard outward objection, objection from them on our process that would then lead to a joint policy development.
Okay, Commissioner Mikhajic?
Yeah, just a couple of words on the process and schedule with particular emphasis on public testimony. And then, I'll start with the tribes and then get to the content of a lot of the letters that we're getting. So it was my understanding that we released a draft for public review at our August 1 meeting. That was going to go out for public review. And at this meeting, we would hear from the public. We've got a lot of letters that have come in. I've read them. There's some excellent content in all of them, really. Some of the things I think we should have some serious discussion about. And I think Ron Warren's isolated one of the most poignant points, which is, well, exactly what is going to be the standard if it's not an HSRG standard? Now, we heard a lot about how the HSRG principles, after the science review process had gone through, and what we heard at our workshop on the science, was that those principles still hold, and I think everybody believes that. The exact standards, though, what we heard at our workshop was those are a policy decision as to what exactly the standards are, because you have to balance rebuilding and equilibrium with the other social and economic factors that aren't just a matter of scientific calculation. So, but anyway, we were supposed to hear about all that and on Saturday, hear from the public and then ask ourselves, should any of the draft language be changed? In response to what we hear for public comment, should we modify that? The point that deals with the HGMP structure or the table of contents or the, this question of standards, should there be different language in there? This is scheduled for a final decision on October 22nd. We committed to the tribes that after we had finished hearing from the public and after we had thought about what to do about that, that before there was any final decisions on that, we would talk to them. And I presume that's still on the schedule for some time. I'm looking at the calendar here, in mid-October or certainly before October 22nd, we would show anything that comes up out of Ron's presentation on October 2nd as to any new language or not. We would want to hear from the tribes before we made any kind of a decision. So I think that's still on track. I have not heard that we're not going to meet with the tribes prior to October 22nd. I have not heard that we should not have a final decision on October 22nd. A lot of that's driven by our current commissioner status. What is a little bit troubling, though, is some of the public testimony has said that we did not send out a notice on August 1st saying, here's the public review draft. We want everybody to comment, and we want to hear from you at our next meeting. And when I finish with this discussion, maybe I would just ask for a fact check if that's really true or not, because normally we do have a post-commission meeting news release that says, here's what's happened. And I have presumed that it said the commission released a public review draft on policy 3619 and is asking for comments. If that is not true or wasn't clear to the public and they're all asking for additional time to comment on the public review draft, then when would that happen? And I thought I maybe heard Ron say, something about extending public comment from September 12th to October 1st. And then dealing with questions of language changes, because there hasn't been enough opportunity for the public to comment on the public review draft. And as one commissioner anyway, I'm open to that. If it's true that the notice wasn't proper, or that there are a lot of people out there who have not heard this is going on, it's been going on for 2 years to some degree. So it'd be curious to someone who's really tuned into this issue, or this is a huge importance to them, that they haven't heard about this. But I guess I'm a little bit open to it. I'm not sure how the smooth flow goes on when we close public comment and have a deliberation over any changes that we might want to consider on October 22nd and discuss with the tribes how that flows. So, Ron, I said a whole bunch of stuff. Let me go back to you and say, it is true that we're still looking to meet with the tribes in mid-October. And could you clarify where we're at on when is public testimony end on this? Is it Saturday, or when is it? Is it October 1st? Or we just went something on the Columbia River here. We just said, let's close out public comment on July 31st, because then we'll sleep on it and decide in September. And when you go to the fish scale to weigh how much public comment we've got since then, I think we'd break the scale. So anyway, I'll put that back to Ron.
Yeah, so Commissioner McIsaac, I don't believe that we did an adequate job in describing to the public, here's a draft policy, commission policy for public review. I think that we owe the public some extension. I did not comment on when that was, but I do know that I have been in touch with Northwest Indian Fish Commission staff on proceedings. More, I've been in touch or continued communication with those tribes who've had an urgency to communicate with us and have some angst about the policy. So I've been staying in touch with them in hopes to assure them that we're either still where the last version that they saw was, until such time we could say, okay, here's some modifications, let's get together and go from there. I think that those are not going to be difficult to put together with the modern technology that we have, because there's no travel, no conference rooms that we have to set up. And I think that that could happen on fairly short order. I may be too optimistic there, but think that that can still happen. I hadn't considered the kind of the October 1st hard cutoff date. I think that October 1st is really, really tough. Given the fact that that's the 12th, so they've got 2 weeks roughly, 2.5 weeks to get comment into us, have it turned around from a comment to us to here's the briefing for the commissioners, so that there can be some consideration for language changes. That too feels kind of truncated, either or both on the public side, and then if you try to give yourself some time to think about language changes because of that cutoff date, then you've got a shortened time frame for the language change and then to kind of sleep on it to see if everybody's comfortable with that final adoption on October 22nd. So unfortunately, I didn't present any options for an easy way out of this. I'm not sure that I have one. I'm reluctant to say, gosh, what we ought to do is announce it now, come back in October and give you a full presentation, because that only kicks the can down to the following commission meeting consider adoption at that time. And I know that we've had this policy open for a couple of years, and I for one, as important as this policy is, I want it done right more than I want it done, but I would like to complete it.
So maybe it's a good discussion that we've had just here, and we'll talk more about it on Saturday and try to think up some things.
Yeah. So just so, are there any other questions or comments by Fish Committee members or commissioners before I weigh in? Yeah, not seeing any. This is always a tough one. You know, we have many groups that have commented, and as Commissioner McIsaac said, very substantive, thoughtful comments, useful comments. But then we have some folks that, you know, for whatever reason, are asking for an additional 30 days. For example, I saw Long Live the Kings want another 30-day extension. But the problem, of course, is is that how do we meaningfully incorporate all those comments, put them in potential language changes, have the commission then approve it, then go to the tribal, our co-managers, then have this all ready to go by October 22nd. So, you know, I mean, this is so important, I think, to everybody and to all stakeholders. We don't want to be criticized for poor process. They can criticize us for anything else, but process is a tough one. So, I don't know, maybe what we do is we think about between now and the commission meeting, you know, Ron and commissioners, some sort of, you know, adjustment to the timeline or working within the timeline, or maybe we don't extend comment period at all. But, you know, at some point we need to make a decision on this. And so I guess what we'll do for now, I guess the Fish Committee doesn't have any real recommendation, it doesn't sound like, about how to proceed at this point. We will, you know, we'll talk more about it, or we will talk more about it on Saturday after the presentation. And I see we've got 4 minutes remaining until 2:30. Anything else for the good of the order before we adjourn for today?
Not from staff that I'm aware of, Commissioner.
Okay. Well, why don't we call this a wrap? And we've got a busy next couple days, Friday, Saturday, everybody, commission, staff. And so everybody rest up, and we'll see everybody Friday morning, bright and early. Thank you, Ron. And thank you.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you, staff, and members of the public for joining us. We'll adjourn for today. Thank you.